Hello, welcome to the Energy Question with David Blackman. I'm your host, David Blackman, and I don't even know my own name today. That's crazy. My special guest for this episode is Antoine Haff, who is the co-founder of a company called Kairos, which is creating some incredible or providing some incredible information data services to various energy businesses across the globe. Antoine, thank you so much for doing the show.
Thanks, David, for having me.
Antoine, for those who are not familiar, is also a former chief analyst at the International Energy Agency and a former lead industry economist at the U.S. Energy Information Administration. So that's quite a background in the maintenance and creation of energy-related data. So I'm really honored to have Antoine as my guest today. Before we get into the interview about your company, Antoine, why don't you take a few moments and tell us how Kairos came about and the reasons why you went down the road of creating this company?
Well, we created Kairos because we felt there was a need for more data and better data on the energy industry, the energy markets, and also on climate-related issues that affected the energy. I was at the IEA at the time, as we said. I had been at the EIA before, and I worked with fantastic colleagues putting out the best institutional data out there that serve as benchmark for the industry. But I realized that there were many blind zones, blind spots in the data we were putting out, that oftentimes we had to model to fill the gaps in the surveys that we put out. The president of Kairos, Antoine Rostand, was at the time at Schlumberger Business Consulting, a consultancy within Schlumberger that he had created. And he had the same perception coming from the users of the data. He had been working with industry, with people who had made billions of dollars of investment based on data that were outdated the minute they were put out, not because of a lack of ability from the institutional organizations, but just because the market was moving so fast, the growth happening very much out of the OECD, where the most sophisticated statistical collection systems are located. So there was really a need, but we felt there was also an opportunity because of the huge amount of information available just on the internet, on the websites of various companies and countries, but also from new technologies like satellite imaging, like geolocation data, like social media posts. So and at the same time, the cost of computing, the capacity of computing was increasing, the cost of data storage was falling, the satellite imagery data were becoming commoditized, more and more satellites being launched all the time at costs that were falling down. So there was a huge opportunity, as we saw it, to tap into these vast resources and use artificial intelligence to translate the raw data from these sources into actionable signals that the energy industry could use, either for operation purposes or for trading purposes or for even communications purposes about what they're doing, for example, on the environment and climate.
Yeah, I have a long background in the oil and gas business. It's just been 25 years ago. Just a quarter of a century ago, when a good friend of mine named Alan Gilmer founded a company that was then called Drilling Info, that is now Enverus.
Right.
And just to the first effort to digitalize lease records and well drilling records in the state of Texas, which of course was the busiest part of the oil business in the United States for a long time. And now to see how it's all evolved to an enterprise like yours is truly amazing. And it's so important. I think everyone in the energy business, will agree that having access to the kind of real-time information you're talking about and your company is producing now is just vital to the success of the business. I mean, one thing, just something simple that you're doing here is providing drilling companies, upstream companies, with information about the newest well pads that have been sited, you know, in the general vicinity around a drilling location they're about to drill. Talk about why that's important to an upstream, a producing company.
Oh, sure. We monitor fracking. We monitor oil field activity in the tight oil basins and tight gas basins in the U.S. And there's many different use cases for that. But one is, as you said, making companies aware of activities about to take place next door to their wells is critical, because when somebody starts fracking next to your facilities, this can create damage to your well. So in order to minimize damage, it's very important for companies to have advance notice of when their neighbors are going to start drilling and fracking, so that they can shut down their operations temporarily and then reopen and minimize the damage. They can save millions of dollars this way. And we do this. We track this activity by following every lease in the U.S. With satellite imagery, but also with geolocation data. So the minute there's a permit, we monitor the location, we track the location, and we see every stage of development, from the pad preparation to the drilling to the fracking and well completion. So that's
One thing I'm curious about is what is your company's method for obtaining the satellite information? Does it require like licensing with satellite companies to be able to download their information in real time like this?
Well, we provide information to companies in many different ways. I mean, it can be through APIs or through data download. We can send them data. The way we access the data ourselves, we made a decision at the very onset of our work not to invest in hardware, not to have our own satellites. We work with more than 10 different constellation satellites today. And they range in very much in terms of the kind of sensors they have, the kind of revisit frequency they have. But our approach is to really focus on image processing. That's our core value add. We've been working with scientific labs in France and elsewhere, people who have been experts in satellite imagery for the last 25, 30 years. And we really developed a know-how that's unique in terms of exploiting raw imagery and combining imagery from different sources, different satellites, combining that, fusing that with our proprietary database of assets, for example, and extracting data from that. So we don't invest in our own satellites. That means our costs are very low. We access preferentially public data, public satellite data from the European Space Agency, from NASA. So data that are free to acquire. And that keeps our costs extremely low and makes our offering extremely cost competitive.
That's so interesting to me. Another thing you're able to do is not just provide real-time information to your clients, but also insights on what's going to happen in the future. How does that part of your business work?
So you're right that what we do has some forecasting capacity. Typically, we don't engage in forecasting in the traditional sense. We don't do modeling projections 1 year, 10 years out, partly because we feel very strongly that in today's world, this is increasingly difficult and sometimes misleading, because the market and the industry and the climate itself are changing so quickly that you can't really extrapolate from past data sets to have a good sense of what's going to happen next. There's too much unpredictability in the market, just from extreme weather events. The seasonality is changing, but the industry, the fuel mix is evolving rapidly. So completely uncharted territory. And we feel strongly that in this space, sometimes the best you can do is what we call nowcasting, having real-time information on what's actually happening on the ground, not necessarily extrapolating from past trends, but really having a clear-eyed, real-time view of what's actually taking place. But sometimes this view does give you a little bit of a lead on what's going to happen next. For example, we monitor crude storage inventories around the world, worldwide, and having a good sense on crude stocks typically under normal circumstances gives you a lead of 1 to 2 weeks on what the price change is going to be further out. You know, when we monitor facilities such as gas liquefaction plants in the US, for example, we see when they come down, but we also can see through geolocation data when the plants are about to start again. So again, it's a bit of a lead time that can be very valuable for operators and traders.
So another
another example that comes to mind is in Texas, in particular, in California, and elsewhere in the US, we monitor now the development, the deployment of solar energy when new facility utility scale solar facilities come on. And we've been able to have a good sense of delays and bottlenecks in the pipeline of new capacity, and to correct for the ERCOT forecast that tend to be extremely ambitious early in the year and then get downgraded dramatically as the year goes by, and new capacity fails to show up. So we have a good view of what's going to happen there.
You mentioned ERCOT. Are you also engaged in some of the other regional grids around the United States?
So we've been focusing for this work. We track solar capacity and battery storage. And we started really with ERCOT and also with California, because that's where most of the activity takes place. But now we've expanded this coverage to the whole U.S. And next is going to be the rest of the world.
So are you in other countries now? Are you strictly in the U.S. right now?
We are global. So satellites have a global reach. We are global. Our headquarters are in France, in Paris, and we tap into the pipeline of data scientists that comes out of the French educational system. But we have offices in Houston, in New York, in London, in Singapore, and we have also an office in Bangalore in India. We're going to expand this network over the next couple of years. But we're very global, but a lot of our business is in the US, because the US is the most dynamic energy industry in the world. That's where there's the most appetite for innovation, the most willingness to onboard new technologies.
So yeah, you talk about the new technologies. I've talked to so many business leaders in the startup businesses now that are being spurred on by the incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act, and everybody, trying to take advantage of those incentives and subsidies. And I'm assuming that's going to probably mean, I'm sure you're anticipating that that's going to mean a really kind of a big array of new business opportunities for an information provider like Kairos, right?
Yeah, I hope you're right. I mean, it surely started a kind of feeding frenzy out there, but there's huge potential. The area that we're particularly excited about ourselves is in methane abatement. We've developed a platform to track methane emissions, super emitters, globally and with a very high frequency. There's a lot of emphasis in the Inflation Reduction Act on methane abatement. We've been working with government agencies, as well as UN, the International Methane Emissions Observatory. And we're really looking forward to helping the industry dramatically reduce its methane footprint, and in so doing, make what we think is the biggest contribution that can be done to climate action. You can achieve more by removing super emitters and big methane emissions from the industry in terms of reducing the climate footprint than can be achieved by any other means in a very short period of time. You can do more to reduce the footprint by taking super emitters out than by it would take decades to convert the automobile fleet to electric vehicles to get the same result.
I wonder too, and I'm not sure what the answer is, but where methane's concerned, with the satellite data you're able to access, can you help companies, identify those super emitter sites where the big emissions are taking place?
Yeah, we can. And we have a platform which I think is the best equipped to do this today. We use various satellites, different fleets, particularly Saturn IFFP of the Copernicus constellation of the European Space Agency, but also Sentinel-2, NASA, Landsat-8, and others. And we have a very good view on supermeters. Now I'm talking about big events, not small leaks,
right.
not leaking, not tiny leaks from big events. And but big events are the top priority of regulators. They're the low hanging fruits for climate action. That's exactly what I think EPA is going to go after. That's what the IMO at the UN and Europe is going after, with the Mars, the methane alert and response system that we're helping them design and put in place. So there's a huge opportunity there.
Yeah, and when you look at what's been happening in that space where ESG is concerned, and companies, you know, really trying to reduce their methane emissions, you've had this kind of cottage industry of ESG ratings services kind of pop up over the last couple of years that, you know, help certify producers of natural gas, help certify their gases responsibly produced. Is there an opportunity for Kairos to work cooperatively with those kinds of ratings companies that are Canary is one of them, Project Canary is one of them, I know. Is there an opportunity for you guys to provide services to them as well?
Absolutely, yeah. I think, you know, the kind of, so when it comes to methane detection, there's many different technologies. You mentioned Canary, there's others, there's, you know, ground sensors, there are airplanes, drones, tasking satellites, monitoring satellites. They all have some kind of advantages and disadvantages. But we think that the kind of monitoring we provide with monitoring satellites is a foundational component of any kind of reporting system, because we're unique in our capacity to capture intermittent emissions. You know, the big emissions, the supermeters, are intermittent. They typically don't last very long, sometimes not that more than a few hours, but in a few hours they can do a lot of damage. So the ability to track almost continuously what's going on the field is very important to capture those emitters, which sometimes are due to pipeline maintenance, sometimes are due to equipment that fails, various reasons. But it's very important to capture that. And you can't really capture it with any other technologies. You can't do it with tasking satellites because you only can task them at given times. You can't do aerial surveys all day long and 365 days a year. Ground sensors might not have ground sensors in the right place, and they might not be able to measure what you emit. It's very difficult to measure methane emissions from the ground. It's much easier from satellites. So this is a key building block of any kind of monitoring system. And we are indeed talking with various groups that are looking at certifying or are certifying emissions. And it's important, I think, to include our contributions so that there's trust in these measurements. There's been recently some reports that maybe certified LNG was not so clean, that as clean as it purposed to be, and so on. It's very important that any certification be really robust, science-based, and totally beyond any kind of doubt and suspicion.
So I wonder about, you know, I have been following carbon capture very closely, the progress of carbon capture growth in the United States. I wonder if your technology has an application to what I think is going to become a really kind of exploding industry here in the coming years. Where, you know, what about a carbon capture project? I assume you've got applications that would apply pretty well to that as well.
So the blessing and the curse of our technology is you can apply it to many different areas.
Yeah,
and you can definitely follow carbon capture projects. Right now, we have an embarrassment of riches, so we're trying to limit the scope of what we do so as not to disperse, to scatter ourselves. We need to be focused on the most relevant project today. I think the time when we're going to monitor carbon capture projects is going to be very soon. Right now, in the carbon capture space, what we do really is monitoring forestry, vegetation assets, carbon offset projects. So nature-based solutions, not really direct air capture through facilities, but nature-based solutions. We have developed a technology that monitors forests, and we very sophisticated. We keep track of afforestation, deforestation, forest degradation. We can measure the height of the canopy of forests, the density of foliage, diversity of species, and the amount of carbon embedded in forestry assets. Again, very important to build trust in carbon offsets. There's been some reports, devastating reports about, you know, offsets that were based on the questionable measurements and facts. But the technology is there to remotely, efficiently, cost-efficiently monitor the development of carbon offset projects. And that's key to building trust in them and to helping developers extract the value that they deserve from it, to help to help also host countries extract the value that they can from their forestry assets.
Well, given your background with both the IEA and the EIA, another question that pops into my head here is there an opportunity for Kairos to partner in any way with those kinds of government kinds of entities? Although I guess the IEA really is not technically a government entity. And it seems more likely to me that there might be an opportunity, and maybe you're already doing it, to also provide data and information to an international organization that's kind of independently funded by a group of subscribing countries like the International Energy Agency. Is there an opportunity for that to happen?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, totally. My colleagues, my former colleagues at IEA are very savvy and very alert, and they're catching on, and we're working with them. So we're working with them on methane. We're providing them with data on the crude inventories. We're working on other areas as well. As I mentioned before, we work with the International Methane Emissions Observatory, which is agency of UNEP, the United Nations Environment Program. We're working with other governments. We're working with U.S. Government agencies as well. I think the future of data is going to evolve. And agencies like EIA and IEA played a really key role after they were created in the 1970s in providing transparency to the market, to a market that was quite opaque at the time. Right. But the world is evolving. The geospatial revolution has really far-reaching implications and opens roads that we're only beginning to explore. And I think it's in the future, you're going to see government agencies work collaboratively with private sector geospatial companies such as ours. There's a new model that's being shaped today of public collaboration on data issues.
So I was talking to a class at a local university here near my home, Texas Christian University, yesterday about what's happening in the energy space with an emphasis on why it's so important to get China and India both more engaged in carbon reduction if you're really going to be able to have a real energy transition, which is the aspiration really by the Western governments more than anybody else right now. I wonder if your company is making any inroads in either one of those countries with this kind of, you know, high quality data that could really help them begin to reduce their own carbon emissions there that are, you know, they're the biggest emitters on Earth in addition to the United States. And so it's so critical, I think, to have them more engaged in that effort. Are you, working with anyone in China yet, for example, or making inroads there?
So you're absolutely right that we can't solve the climate crisis without working with countries that are large emitters like China and India. We are working with them in some areas. In other sectors, it's still slow going. It's still early days. But I think these countries are clearly on board with the notion that they have to reduce their footprint. They also are dependent, in the case of China in particular, on coal, for example, which is a high carbon source of energy. But there's been, you're opening a whole kind of, not a can of worms, but a very large topic we could go on for.
I know, yes.
A long time to discuss this. But the discussions on climate have their ups and downs with countries like China and India, but things are moving, and the potential for abatement in China and in India is huge. And for example, in China, we've made huge inroads in our capacity to detect methane coming out of coal mines. And this was very challenging at first in the first couple of years when we developed our technology. We could measure carbon emissions at the basin level from Shaanxi province, for example, or from the Bowen Basin in Australia, or from the Rockies or Appalachia in the US. Right. But we had trouble identifying precisely what mine the methane plumes were coming from and so on. In the last year or so, we've made major breakthroughs in image processing capacity. And we're now able, in part with the help of new satellites that have been recently launched, to identify precisely where the emissions come from, which mine, even which unit in a given mine, which elevator, which particular processing area of the mine emissions might be coming from. So in China, this has huge potential because China has the biggest coal industry in the world. The potential for capturing methane from these mines is very large. And this would be a win-win for China because it would reduce the footprint, but also make more energy available to the domestic market in the form of natural gas, in the form of methane. So great potential there.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. I wish we had all day, frankly, but we're up against time. I really appreciate you taking the time to do the show. For folks who want to find out more about your company, I know the website address is www.kairos, and Kairos is spelled KAYRROS, two R's, right? .com. And anywhere else they can go to find, I'm sure you have social media presence as well, correct?
We do, and we have our contacts on our website. Very happy to take emails and calls and we get back to people. So thanks very much, David. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about what we do, and I wish we had more time to go in greater length about it.
Well, maybe we can do this again here in a few months, and when there's an event you want to talk about, and just do a follow-up. I like to always extend that invitation to the guests that are really interesting like you. So but we'll stay in touch with Bridget and see if there's an opportunity to do another one here later in the year.
I look forward to it.
Okay. Thank you very much. And thanks to Stuart Turley and the Sandstone Group, who produces our show, and to our star producer, Eric Perel. This is David Blackman signing off for now.